produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
So welcome to our second ever bonus Q&A of Food, We Need to Talk. I'm Yuna Jada.
And I'm Dr. Eddie Phillips.
And our first Q&A went so splendidly. You guys sent so many great questions that we decided we needed to have a second. And for our second Q&A, we actually have a theme of
exercise.
Exercise is good.
Exercise as much as I possibly can.
The best benefit for the least amount of time would definitely be a resistance exercise.
Make sure you tune in next week for one of our regular episodes, just going to be all about supplements and cleanses and detoxes, fat burners. I think it's all super interesting stuff. But then again, I always think every episode is interesting. So our first question comes from Johnny Schneider Antoine via email. He says that he heard our episode on exercise and he understands how cardio will burn calories during the exercise and resistance training will burn less during the exercise, but will increase your metabolism so that you burn more afterwards.
So my question is the following. What happens if somebody does both cardiovascular exercises and resistance training? Let's say somebody run 3 or 4 times a week and they go to the gym to lift weight 3 or 4 times a week. Is it a good thing or is it a bad thing to doing both? Are there any advantages to doing both? Are there any disadvantages to doing both?
So first off, Johnny, I admire your energy to get to
know,
the gym and
I
to
know,
do
he's
that
like
much.
Dedicated.
The answers are actually going to be hopefully pretty clear. And in the world of exercise and physical activity, we have a national guideline. So let me just start off with a few key points. It's this 700-page report. You do not have to read it. That's my job, and we're going to get down just to the executive summary. Over the course of an entire week, all you have to get is 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity. Or if you want to go vigorous, you can do it all in 75 minutes. And it doesn't matter when you do it, and it doesn't matter for how long you do it each time. Just get up to those numbers.
But how do we know if we're doing moderate versus vigorous?
Oh, so all right. This is great. The simplest test in the world is called a talk test. Okay? You and I are standing here. Let the record be...
I know. We do this standing, guys, by the way.
We are outstanding in our field here. We are.
I know.
We are standing up. We are doing a little bit of light activity. We're not sitting. We're able to talk to each other, and we'd be able to sing to each other.
Yes.
And we're not talking about the quality of my voice.
Yeah, we're not going to try it out, but we could sing if we wanted to.
That's light. As soon as we start going moderately, we're going to go for a brisk walk. We'd be able to talk to each other, but we wouldn't be able to sing, meaning like hold the note. And when you get vigorous, you cannot finish a sentence. So the best part of this is that when I go and exercise with my wife, we go for a run together. Now, we're running at the same pace, but for her, the activity is only moderate, okay?
She can talk.
She can talk. She can talk and talk. But for me, we're working at a speed that's vigorous for me, okay? I could barely finish a sentence. That's how we know it's vigorous. So when we run for that half hour, hour, I am the best husband in America because I just ask her, sweetheart, tell me about your week in detail. And I can grunt and I could nod and I could be a loving husband and I could just try to do my best to stay up with her. I'm working vigorously. She's working only moderately.
And the other thing to add to this, Johnny, is that it kind of depends on your goal. So if you're really focused on just getting stronger, then it's probably running will be interfering with that goal if you're running quite a bit during the week. Or if your goal is to be training for a marathon or something, then lifting a lot is probably going to interfere with that during the week. But if your goal is general health, then it's probably a good idea to be doing a mix of both. So Eddie, Sarah Jennifer asks on Instagram, how can I incorporate exercise into my busy schedule? Is it okay to work out twice a week on weekends for longer periods of time? Would that be equivalent to working out 2 to 4 times during the week?
So according to the physical activity guidelines, you just have to get those 150 minutes. If you do it all on the weekend, it's actually okay. And you're going to get the vast majority of the benefits of physical activity just by doing it on the weekend. You could do it all in 75 minutes in a vigorous spinning class on a Sunday morning. That's okay. However, for practical purposes, to avoid injuries, to make it so that you're enjoying your exercise and you could maybe do it during the week as well, we usually recommend that people break it up into smaller pieces. But you could do it all on the weekend.
working out at all is always good, right?
And if you get in the 150 minutes on the weekends, you will still be in the minority of Americans who are actually fulfilling the guidelines.
That's true. So getting back to those guidelines and strength training, Eddie, we had many questions from many listeners, but I'm just going to highlight Summer Aubrey on Instagram, that's her handle, and Ines Vargas on Instagram. And both of them asked, how do yoga and Pilates fit into resistance training?
So I love this question about yoga, in part because it's so remarkably popular. There are reports of tens of millions of people being interested in or actually trying yoga. But if you've done any yoga and you've been to more than one class, you will realize how different styles of yoga can be. If you're looking to get stronger, you need to go to a class, something like Ashtanga or Power Yoga or Vinyasa Flow, in which you're working hard. If you're working hard, your muscles will get stronger. But make no mistake, if you're in the yin yoga,
the relax yoga,
or the restorative relax yoga, or Nidra, which is all about relaxation, just because they call it yoga doesn't mean you're going to get stronger lying there and relaxing. Mm-hmm. You'll have other benefits from it.
You'll have the de-stressing benefits from our stress episode. Shameless plug for last week's episode. And what about Pilates?
So Pilates is great also. It really works your core. It's remarkable. I find it remarkably humbling when I go to a Pilates class.
I know, they're hard. They're really hard.
But it's working mostly your core. And the recommendations on the resistance training actually talk about 8 different major muscle groups. So it goes beyond just the core.
So I think we should talk about those muscle groups because they relate to our next question. But for now, we are actually going to take a short break and we will be right back.
We're back, Yuna. What's the next question?
So our next question comes from Matt on Instagram. He says, when I go to the gym, I think I overcomplicate things. When I go online, it gets even more complicated. What do you recommend for a simple gym routine just to stay healthy? And we got this question from a lot of people, which is basically like, how do I know where to start? How can I start at the gym? Right. What do I do at the gym if I'm first starting to go? So, yeah.
Like, you sold me on the idea, now what?
Yeah, exactly.
So I would start off with the idea that physical activity, which is the broader term for all of this, has to be enjoyable and has to be something that you really look forward to doing. Rather than complicating things, really, let's make it simple. So to Matt or to anyone who's getting more active, find something that you like. It may be a sport. It may be gardening. It may be going for a walk. It may be a dance class. I don't know. You may not know. Like, try different things.
Let's say you're the average person and you want to go maybe 2 to 3 times at most, and you want the most bang for the least amount of pain, I guess. Then you'd probably do the best with a full body routine 2 to 3 times a week. So, Eddie, that means that we'd be covering those 8 muscle groups. So what are the 8 muscle groups?
Well, I'm going to start with my legs. I love doing squats. I love doing lunges. Sometimes I'm holding weights when I do those.
Okay, so usually people start with the leg exercises because that's kind of the biggest muscles in your body that are the most taxing. So a leg exercise is a great thing to start with. And then what would you move on to?
Maybe my back. What do you got there, Yuna?
I know, I'm going to turn into a personal trainer. Personal trainer Yuna here. So for back, we can do a horizontal or a vertical pull. So that'd be some kind of row or some kind of pull up or pull down.
Mm-hmm. And what about for my chest?
Chest, you can start off with a push-up, or if you're more advanced, you can do some sort of bench press or chest press.
Mm-hmm. And for my abs?
So for abs, you can start off with a plank, and then if you want to make it harder, you can do crunches or leg raises. Making it even harder, you can do a decline sit-up, and you can add weights to that according to whatever level you're at.
So you often slow me down when we get into too much jargon. So,
I know.
Declined? Does that mean I don't want to do it?
No. That just means the bench is, like, downhill.
Okay. So let me step in here also, because this sounds a little bit overwhelming, and I do these exercises, but what I prefer to do is actually to go to a little boot camp. I've got someone sort of shouting out what to do, and I do it, and by the time the hour's over, I've covered all of these 8 major muscle groups. So maybe for people listening, you might want to go to get some instruction, find a personal trainer if you can afford that. For a lot of my patients, I send them to a physical therapist first who instructs them on the key exercises that they need to do to start to get stronger. And you don't have to do all of it. Even a little bit is going to be better than nothing.
Our next question comes from Abby via email. Abby is a pediatrician in Boston, Eddie. I know. She's like... She's
a colleague.
And she says that she basically began to wonder about when the best time to exercise is. So she says, I'm curious, as many of our hormone levels, cortisol, et cetera, have a diurnal pattern to them. So I was wondering whether this, in turn, has an impact on how our bodies respond to exercise. So first of all, Eddie, can you define diurnal?
So diurnal just means daily. There's some science, which we talked about in the stress episode, that cortisol is higher in the morning, that's normal, and then falls off and is especially low when you're ready to go to sleep. And that by doing vigorous exercise late in the evening, there's some thoughts that your cortisol is going to go up because you're stressing your body, and that may perturb your sleep.
Right. And then there was another big study done in 2018 that showed that exercise done late in the evening actually had people have better sleep. So there's kind of like conflicting views on this. But basically, the best way to know whether or not exercise late at night will disturb your sleep is to try exercise late at night and see how it happens.
Be your own experiment.
Be your own experiment and try it out at different times of the day. But Eddie, what is the most important thing that people should be considering?
Fit it in wherever it's going to work for you. And also, you have a choice of exercise. For some people, they may not want to go vigorous in the evening, but that's a great time to do your stretching or to do some light weightlifting before you go to bed.
What about that old myth that people have of like doing exercise?
Oh,
like
rev you up. We're going to rev you up.
Fasting in the morning will rev your metabolism. Yeah.
I don't know that the science is really there for that one.
Okay, so no science on revving the metabolism.
Although I could tell you that on the weekends, I like to get up with my wife, and we love to exercise first thing in the morning, just sort of not just get it over, but it sets the tone for the day.
Yeah, it makes you more like productive the rest of the day. That's
but
what I found.
On other times, let's say like when I'm on my own schedule, I like exercising in the evening after the day is over, and I just want to chill out and sort of take a break before the evening begins. So you do it when it works best for you.
Our last question comes from Marguerite Adriani via Instagram. When does time spent on exercise become too much? So if you're looking out for this, the first thing to probably look for would be physical symptoms. For example, being sore to a certain extent when you're starting a new program or something might be normal, but being excruciatingly sore for weeks on end is probably not normal. So that might be a good sign that you are overtraining.
Also, the soreness should be in your muscles.
If
it's going into your joints, you're already doing something wrong.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not sore joints, sore muscles. And then looking out for other things like disturbances in your sleep or being exhausted for the rest of the day after your workout. Like after your workout, you should be like energized to take on the day, not like, you know, in pain and hurting.
So another way of looking at this is what is an overdose of exercise? We talk about exercise as a medicine. And part of the work I do is actually getting doctors to prescribe exercise like it is, which is a really good medicine. But what's an overdose? And the overdose could come as a psychologic stress. So if you're actually getting depressed or you're stressed out by having to exercise, it's a little too much. And try something else, like maybe go for a walk when you're so sore that you feel like I can't go for a run. Like maybe a walk is enough for that day. Try some yoga that day.
That's all the questions we have time for today.
Aww.
I know Eddie gets really sad at the end of bonus episodes. He loves them so much. If you haven't already, be sure to follow us at Food We Need to Talk on Instagram. And tune in next week because we'll be talking about detox teas and cleanses.
Yeah, the supplement industry is fascinating, isn't it? I mean, it is a multi-billion dollar industry that has almost no science behind it.
And listeners, we would love a small favor from you. Take our listener survey. Please go to wbur.org/foodsurvey and tell us just a little bit about yourself. This will really help us make the podcast even better. It will take less than 5 minutes.
Guys, especially if you're interested in us doing a season 2, we need to hear from you. I've been hearing from you on Instagram, but we need to hear from you on the survey. Let us know what worked, what didn't work. Would you be interested in it? What did you like? Please let us know.
WBUR.org/foodsurvey. Food We Need to Talk is a production of WBUR.
Our editor and producer is George Hicks, and this episode was mixed by Paul Kahlo.
Our supervising editor is Elizabeth Harrison. Our executive producer is Kerry Goldberg.
With additional editorial and technical guidance from Catherine Brewer and Paul Veitkus and the WBUR iLab, I'm Una Jada.
And I'm Dr. Eddie Phillips.
See you next week.
In the gym.
Oh, see you in the gym.